Hello, hello, hello.
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 Hi.
Yo. Welcome to Section 119 Sports, the podcast where we talk Aggie sports and all Aggie sports.
Remember how for the last, 3 months we've been saying that we need to make a better intro than that?
Dude, are you dissing the intro?
Continue.
All right, continue on. We got a sick show set up for y'all today. Talking, of course, some men's basketball because we're just getting down to the wire of the season.
Down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, down to the are we going to be above 500 or not this year. And we're going to be talking a lot, actually, about the other Olympic sports here at Utah State. Talking some gymnastics, some women's basketball, some softball, which is starting up, and everyone's least favorite but have to talk about it sport, football. So let's start off. Let's start off on a high note, I think. Gymnastics. We kind of talked about them last week, how they're probably, maybe them and men's tennis is the two best programs we got here at Utah State. That win over BYU probably kind of confirms that a little bit for me. What do you guys think?
Well, so the gymnastics team on Friday set a new season high score that, you know, they've already done pretty well this season, and they were able, BYU came up here, and for the second time in 3 weeks, the Aggies beat the Cougars. So, yeah, that pretty much solidifies them as my favorite team.
Yeah, I mean, anytime we beat BYU and they consistently do it, I mean, that's more we can say than anybody else. So,
yeah. No, we've given gymnastics some love on this podcast in the past, and like I've said before, I think that just with football and basketball so down, basketball, I guess, not quite as down, and it might be on an upward trend, but with the two big money sports that everyone cares about down, I've put a lot more time and investment into the other teams and really gotten familiar with them, and man, this gymnastics team is good. We're talking probably just because of the way that they do the rankings and how scores are averaged and dropped and whatnot, this is a team that probably in 3 or 4 weeks here we're going to be talking about in the top 25 in the nation.
Very possible. And you look, I mean, let's give a shout out there, Madison Ward. I mean, granted, college gymnastics is kind of a step below the Olympic gymnastics, a couple steps maybe. But
however, there's a lot of Olympic gymnastics that do compete in college gymnastics.
Yeah.
You know, there's an enormous difference in college gymnastics in the very, very upper tier, you know, the top five, top 10 schools and the lower part of the top 25. There's a pretty big difference. Utah State couldn't just go upset
Georgia.
Like Georgia, yeah, or one of the traditional powerhouses, even Utah, just on any given day. It doesn't quite work the same way, but this is a really good team. And you just gave a shout-out to Madison Ward. She has won 5 weeks in a row the Conference Floor Specialist of the Week. That's just crazy.
It's where they changed a rule just for her, because they used to have a rule where you could only get that for three times in a season. But they're like,
the first 3 weeks of the season,
nobody else is really doing anything, so we're going to change that rule.
She's had three straight 9.9s on the floor, which is near perfect. I mean, a tenth of a point from perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I was saying, it's a step below Olympics, but, I mean, this is still really, really good. And like I was saying with a guy I was watching the meet with, if we see anybody do this, outside of gymnastics meet, you're going to go nuts. just one pass on the floor from, Madison Ward, she, does, cartwheel, a flip, and then a double back flip, and then another front flip or something like that. I don't even know. It's just fast that I can't even keep track of it. But, you see somebody do that in the TSC, you're going to go nuts. There, it's just oh, yeah, Madison Ward just did another nice floor routine, 9.9. Way to go. But, I mean, that's, the best compliment I think you can give somebody is, when they're so good that when they do their best, it's just, sweet, you did it again.
Yeah. Just to give you, another picture of how good this team is. Right now they're 5-2. Given in gymnastics, head to head doesn't really matter so much. It's more about your averages and whatnot. But they've defeated a top 25 in North Carolina State, who when they met up they were number 16, I believe. They've defeated BYU twice, who is always near that top 25 mark. They did lose to Arizona, who's good but not great, but that was by far our worst performance in probably 4 or 5 years when that happened. And a close loss to New Hampshire, who's a very good gymnastics school as well. So, like, this team, I'm just saying, like, not only are they good, but they're fun to watch. So, looking what they have coming up, this week they're going down to Southern Utah,
which is ranked number 20 right now.
Who is a very good team. And that's, like, you're probably not familiar with how the gymnastics conference works. It's not the Mountain West. It's called the Mountain Rim Gymnastics Conference, and Southern Utah's a part of that. And so is BYU. So we're conference rivals with those teams. And then the following week, the toughest matchup of the season, Boise State is coming here, who has just blown they have been so good this year. They're number 8 in the country right now. So, maybe my theory will be tested about the upper tier of gymnastics teams going against the lower top 25. That could be the case, and it's going to be fun to see how Utah State does against them.
Boise State is currently, averaging a 196.238, and their high is a 197.025. So that's pretty good for a
which their average team. Is their lowest score is higher than our highest score. Not to say that we can't do it. Utah State has had a lot of near perfection, but then if one gymnast messes up, that really brings a team score down quite a bit. Or I guess two in the same rotation.
One score, yeah.
But yeah. Anything could happen, and so that's going to be fun to watch.
I can't say that Coach Walsh did say that's the big goal for all the girls on the team now. Like, after beating BYU twice, their next big goal is they want to take down Boise. That's a tough one to do, but I mean, hey, if they do it, I say we devote like 20 minutes to them on that show or something.
Hey, and one more shout out. Not only have we beaten BYU twice in the past 3 weeks in gymnastics, they've defeated them 8 of the past 10 times they matched up.
Suck it, Provo. Anyways, that's the highlight of our show, I think. Not that the other teams aren't doing well, but I think they're just kind of not in the territory of the gymnastics team yet. But we got a couple other ones we want to talk about today. Softball, I think, is the next one to kind of come up on the table.
You can't really say they're not doing as good gymnastics because they haven't started yet. So
true. Softball is undefeated right now. They're also undefeating or something.
Unwinless.
Unwinless?
No, they're winless.
They're winless. Okay.
Unwinless.
Yeah, I was gonna say unwinless.
I guess they're unwinless too.
Yeah, they're unwinless, undefeated.
However
they're,
you want to put it.
Yeah,
They haven't had a draw either.
You can say whatever you want about this softball team. It is true.
They're undefeated in matches and games that did not draw.
They're undefeated in matches that have not involved karate.
They're undefeated in games which they have won by 100 points or more.
That is true. Anyways.
That's always going to be true, though.
Yeah, probably, unless they beat somebody by 100. So, anyways, softball.
Even then, they'll be undefeated in those games.
That is, okay, fine. You're right, whatever. But logic. Softball starts this week. Logic is out the window from the past couple minutes.
Logic is going to be at the softball games?
No, logic is out the window. Like, that past couple minutes there just kind of threw that out. But softball starts up here on Friday, I think. And they're actually supposed to be doing pretty well this year.
10th. So, yeah, Friday. Yep. Friday.
They're honorary home because they'll be at it's called the Easton Invitational. Honorary home against Pacific on Friday.
And North Dakota State. They play a doubleheader.
And then I think they play on Saturday again,
doubleheader
too.
As well on Saturday. So 5 games in 3 days this weekend.
Yeah. So I'm not sure how much like this is a like actual sort of season or if this is just like the tune-up where everybody's going to be playing. But, I mean, you have to start somewhere. And baseball, softball, they're both usually pretty good here at Utah State. I think you were saying, like, conference projections.
Yeah, so I took a look at the Mountain West softball preseason poll, and Utah State's picked to finish 4th behind Fresno State, San Diego State, and San Jose State. The Mountain West is a pretty much the same for softball as it is for other sports, except minus Air Force and Wyoming. I don't believe that they probably have club teams or something, but So fourth out of nine is where we're picked to finish. But, you know, it's really – there's, like, the top three teams, and then there's a drop-off in points for votes, and then Utah State, and then the rest of the team. So we'll see. We'll see how they could do. I've seen a lot of quotes and a lot of stuff from the players and coaches. They're pretty fired up for this season, and they think that they really have a good chance to win the championship. And I think that they could make some noise. They don't lose a ton from last year. I believe they lose four senior starters, but they got a lot of good youth on that team as well. So to take a look at the softball schedule, it's a lot different than many other sports because of living in Logan, where, I mean, outside right now, it's like I don't even know what's going on. It's either raining or snowing or I don't know. But
it's hell.
That's a lot of tournaments.
Hell or hail?
Hell.
It's hell outside?
Yeah.
You're right. So
I mean, whenever it rains in February, it's a bad day.
No question. So the softball team plays in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tournaments before even coming home. 25 games before their first home game. But that said, it's still only about a month out. The 17th of March, they'll be at home playing UNLV. So
that's if the snow's melted by then.
You know, they'll be coming into Logan 25-0, and it's going to be sweet.
No. Tell me about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know how any of this week they have Pacific, North Dakota State, Loyola Marymount, Cal State Fullerton, and Loyola Marymount again. So none of those, like, I don't know about softball, but none of those, like, powerhouse teams for other sports. So we'll see how they do. It's going to be,
It's always interesting start of the season.
Tune in.
And we'll find out. Also going to give a quick shout out. Didn't tell you guys this, but men's tennis, I'm going to give a shout out because this week they're on the road. They're playing Arizona, which is a big game for them because last year's coach, Clancy, now coaches at Arizona. So I spoke with some of the players today, actually, and they said that's one of the things they really want from this season is just to beat them. They all love Clancy, but they want some trash talk.
Hey, man. I don't blame them. That's cool.
So I mean,
and they got a real good shot to do it, too, because Arizona's down.
Yeah, they said they're supposed to win that game. Then they've got the ITA championships. They also spoke about that since they qualified after the TCU win. And they're all just kind of like, yeah, we looked at the roster sheet for that, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's like Pac-12, SEC, Big 12. Everyone's top 20 except Utah State. But, hey, they said that we just beat TCU, so we never know. But,
hey, good for them, you know. We are going to talk some Aggie basketball. And a little bit of Aggie. Let's save the Aggie football for the end. But I want to talk a little bit about the women's basketball team.
Oh, we have to.
Because the women's basketball team played in probably the most entertaining basketball game I've watched in a long time on Saturday. Okay, college basketball game.
I don't know. There have been a couple men's ones this year. Like,
okay, but that takes away from the point that I'm making because there's not many, like, I've only watched Utah State. I haven't watched any other college basketball women's teams. But, okay, let me just say it was great. Utah State played Boise State, who killed them earlier in the season, beat them by 20. And, like, 20 looks good compared to what that massacre was. And Boise State came in. They got up really quick, really early, got a double-digit lead. They were up by, I think, 14 or 15 points. And then Utah State comes in the second half. Typically, they're awful in the third quarter. And they held the top scoring team in the entire Mountain West to 2 points in the third quarter. Forced, like, over the game, they forced, like, 25 turnovers, given they had 24. But,
hey, that's positive.
They forced a ton of turnovers, held the top team in the Mountain West, the top scoring team in the Mountain West, to 2 points in the third quarter, gained their own double-digit lead, got up by 12 or 13 points. And then Colorado State storms, Boise State storms back and gets the thing down to the wire, gets fouled on a three-point shot and makes all three free throws. And so Utah State gets the ball, 12 seconds left, run it down the floor, get the exact shot they wanted, a wide-open three in the corner, missed, but tipped in with time expiring. Utah State wins.
I was going to say that was actually really good, like a similarity there with the Super Bowl. until you said that Boise State came back and did
the good,
some stuff.
The good guys won this one.
Yeah, so. The good guys won this one, and yeah, that was kind of a.
It's great. I'm so happy for the women's team. They are now winners of three straight. So,
hey, three straight in anything. I mean, one, we can't say that too often about teams around here. And two, you can't say that too often about any team anywhere. So,
except the Jazz.
Guess there should be a grilled cheese at every women's game, I guess.
And there should be a grilled cheese at every game of any sport. Like, I'm sad I had to miss that one because I miss grilled cheese sandwiches. Like I'm sad I missed that game. Secondly, for missing the buzzer beater. First, for missing the grilled cheese sandwiches. Like,
now, if you have no idea what these two are talking about, a couple of the
probably
regular.
Probably safe that you don't know what we're talking about.
Maybe I shouldn't say this because it might prevent it from happening in the future. No, I'll say it.
Yeah, whatever.
A few of the front row regulars.
That would require people listening to us right now.
Brought a griddle and cooked up some grilled cheese sandwiches. And while the grilled cheese sandwiches were cooking, we blew them out of the water. I mean, the plus minus for grilled cheese sandwiches cooking to grilled cheese sandwiches not cooking is like ridiculous. That was all during the third quarter. And then grilled cheese sandwiches finish cooking. They turn off the griddle, and Boise State almost comes back and wins. So
I think we need to bring these. Was there like an outlet like around there?
Yeah, actually right in the front. It's hidden. And it was on the floor, so nobody even knew, except you could smell grilled cheese all throughout the spectrum. But nobody knew where it was coming from.
Until you started eating grilled cheese.
Exactly.
I didn't even know that. That's really good to know for when my phone's, like, dying.
So here's my theory. We need to take that griddle to Las Vegas for the conference championship, men's and women's, and then take it, once we win the conference championship, to every single round of the NCAA tournament, including the Final Four.
Ain't nobody got money for that.
I'll do a GoFundMe or something.
Go fund our grilled cheese adventures. Yeah. I'll leave that in your court.
Anyway, so the women's team going to play at home on Wednesday against the number one team in the conference, Colorado State. Very, 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 very good team, Colorado State. In short, last time they beat us 74-43.
Yeah, in short, hopes aren't too high of a win there, but I mean, hey, Spectrum Magic, let's give it a shot.
But nobody expected us to beat Boise either.
True.
And, again, I wouldn't put money on it, but it's gonna be a fun game. Hopefully, and maybe you never know what'll happen, and maybe we'll be able to pull off the upset and beat a good team.
Yeah, you never know. But speaking of Boise State and Utah State basketball, the men's didn't. They were on like the reciprocating end of that game, I think. The receiving end. I mean, it was a 2-point loss, although they just kind of dragged it out with free throws. Made it close, but.
Yeah, it was more of a 6 or 7 point loss, to be honest.
Yeah. But.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Last week, I sat here in the same chair. Actually, not the same chair, but same studio.
In the same vicinity.
In the same vicinity, within 2 feet of where I am now. And I said, next week it's going to be really fun to do the show after we've beaten Nevada and Boise State. And we're like, yeah, that's funny because we're not going to win either one of those. And sure enough, we beat Nevada, and that was the best win of the year for, in my opinion, like, by far, bar none. And Boise State, coulda, shoulda, woulda.
The thing about Nevada, though, we didn't only beat them, we beat them.
Beat them. Beat them, beat them. Yeah. Now, I am a huge, when I'm not on the front row heckling him, I'm a huge Cam Oliver fan. I love watching that guy play. He's got something about him that he's just so good. He's a good, big, solid man, and I think he's going to have a good NBA career.
He didn't look that good
to
me.
Utah State neutralized him, though. He wasn't doing crap.
Before we move on to that, I need to correct something. You said that Nevada was the best win of the season. And I really think you're underselling our win over NGIT.
I forgot about that.
I'll take Bristol.
Okay. The best conference win. We'll go with that.
Yeah. Now that we've got that out of the way. But I think the biggest thing from that game was, one, the defensive effort was amazing. Mm-hmm. Nevada averages is like 78 points a game coming into that, and we held them to like under 60. So, I mean, kudos there. And I think we have to give the credit there to Sam Merrill, I think. I mean,
unbelievable. I was talking last week about his performance against Fresno State. He upped it and like multiplied it by 10 times against Nevada. Unbelievable effort there.
Yeah. So if you've ever been listening to us and you're like, how can we be so optimistic about Utah State's future in basketball, how we think they're going to be so good in the next couple of years, is because as like Merrill and McEwen stay in this program, they're going to get more consistent. So game like that, while yeah, that's probably like the best he's going to be able to do, they're going to come around a little bit more often. And even the ones that he's not that great, they're still going to be a little bit better. Like, I think, you know, I saw like a tweet or something just like about everybody talking about how the rest of the Mountain West should be super scared of having to deal with Merrill and McEwen for the next 4 years. I mean,
yeah, I love watching Sam Merrill play so much. He's just got like his offensively, you'd watch him and you'd be like, you know, he's a good player. He's good at passing the ball and whatnot. But defensively and off the ball, he does so many things that are just intangible, things that you can't account for, and seems to do it consistently and with ease. I love it. So
one thing I like about Sam is, you know, it doesn't have to do with stats or anything, is I like his hustle. He continues to play. He plays to his hardest every minute, every second he is out on that floor. He doesn't slow down. He doesn't, you know, take a playoff or offense or defensive end off. He plays 100% that while the clock is going. He doesn't stop till he hears that whistle, and then he might stop for a second until the whistle bowls him back playing
again. Well, and he does it in like a sneaky way too. Like, I feel like you could watch an entire Utah State game and not realize how much Sam Merrill is doing if you're not watching really closely and breaking things down, and then walk away and hear praise about Sam Merrill and be like, okay, what did he do? He held the leading scorer in the conference. Isn't that correct? Marcus Marshall was the leading scorer in the conference.
Once you scored only 2 points in a game, that
kind of 1 of 12, 0 for 7 behind the 3-point line, 1 of 12 overall, 1 rebound. Unbelievable. I mean, that is a game changer. Yeah, and, you know, then he went and did some stuff on the offensive end as well. Like, he wasn't just quiet offensively. Sam Merrill came out and these numbers are off. Got 13 points, you know, 4 assists.
We were talking a couple weeks ago about, like, some NBA comparisons for Sam Merrill. I can't remember who he said, but I've got two names that I think – the second one you guys will like a lot more, I think. But I think that are a little bit more accurate. The first one
– if you say the person I'm thinking of –
you're going to like
it. I hope we're on the same page with
this. I'm pretty sure we are. First one, though, do you guys remember Sasa Vujicic from several years ago for the Lakers?
Okay, that's not who I was thinking of, but yes.
Okay, that's the first one I'm thinking of. Like, super, like a really tough D, kind of small, but he's really tough on D, really tenacious, really gets under your skin, and then just was really good, like, getting timely threes. Like, that, I think, is Clay Merrill. That is a, not Clay Merrill. Sam Merrill's, like, that's his bread and butter. He's really just a lot of tenacious D. And then just the timely offense. Second player, Joe Ingles.
I like that comparison. Yeah. I like that comparison. That's not who I was thinking of. My comparison is awful though, and doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So
if you're going to say Brian Scalabrine, I'm going to slap you. But, I mean, Joe Ingles, I mean, like, I can kind of see that. I mean, Merrill has a really good propensity for making big shots as well as making not just the timely three, but it's like when Utah State's needed a bucket – it always seems like Sam Merrill just knocks down a corner three. Like, that's happened several occasions this season.
And
then defense, I mean, Joe Ingles stopped LeBron James.
Exactly.
That one game.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Is, you know, Joe Ingles he's maybe not an elite defender, but he's a very good defender.
And he gives effort.
Exactly.
One guy he kind of reminds me of that you guys may, you know, it's a little bit out of your guys' time is Matt Harpering. Harpering tended to hustle a lot when he was on the court. He wasn't, you know, the biggest guy on the court. He wasn't the best guy on the court, but he hustled quite a bit.
If I ever see Sam Merrill at Chick-fil-A, then I will agree with you 100%.
Now that we've covered every white guy that's ever played in Utah.
Okay, who are you going to say? I just want to know who you're going to say. You got to say.
Mine makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, still say it.
But it was the first name that popped into my mind for some reason, just because he's a good defender. Ben Wallace.
Okay, yeah, that makes no sense.
No, it makes no sense.
I was thinking like maybe Bruce Bowen or something here, but yeah, no, Ben Wallace makes no sense.
It doesn't, except that he's good at defense in an entirely different way.
I'd say more for Jalen Moore because Moore at least has the hair.
Yeah, but he's also like 200 pounds lighter.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, that was definitely pretty off base.
Anyways, taking it back to like the basketball team instead of Clay Merrill. Why do I always call him Clay Merrill?
Who is Clay Merrill?
I like keep combining Clay Stahl and Sam Merrill. It's really bad.
That would be a pretty good player right there.
Heck yeah, it would be. It'd be what N'Gor Barnaba is supposed to be for us, I think.
Yeah.
Did you guys catch that point in the last game where N'Gor Barnaba hit a 3-pointer?
Yeah. Dude.
What?
Like, I thought we were going to win because
that was cool.
Like, that's three Destiny. Extra points you never think are going to come.
Anyway, the team has 2 rematches this week. Both games that they lost previously at Colorado State, which, to me, the first meeting with Colorado State was the most disappointing loss of the season, I think.
Outside of Weber State.
Yeah, okay, I guess that's probably fair. But just as far as, like, effort goes, I felt so just distraught after that game. Like, what are we doing out there, guys? And then Wyoming, who I actually felt somewhat similarly to.
Wyoming felt a little bit better about because they've actually got, I mean, they're a decent program.
And it was on the road. It was in Laramie after, you know, on a little bit of a road trip.
Like, the Colorado State one, that one upset me because they don't even have, like, a full team. Like, they don't even have half a team. They have like 7-8 players maybe that can actually play in each game. And just like looking at that game, the last one, like I just did not like the game plan or how we approach that. When you have those opportunities, you just attack them and attack them and attack them. Get in the paint, get them in foul trouble, get them tired. I didn't see that. I saw a settling. Contrast that, I guess, to the past couple of games where I think we've been, one, giving a ton more effort on both the offensive and defensive end. I think this game's going to go a lot differently. Then again, I also thought that game was going to go a lot differently. So who knows?
This is revenge week for the Aggies, and it's not only like a big opportunity for them to get revenge on these two teams that already beat them, but I also feel like it's been a really weird season. You know, we lose 4 games in a row that we probably should have at least had a real shot at all of them, and then go beat number 1 Nevada, beat number 3 Fresno, and lose to number 2 Boise by 2 points at their place. So there's like this, I feel like there's sort of this feeling where Aggie fans are going, you know, are we good? Are we just inconsistent? Is the Mountain West just this bad? But these two games are going to be, for me, I think like a make or break as far as, you know, if they go and beat, just looking at the difference between if they win both of these versus lose both of these. If they lose both of these, it's like, man, this team is crap.
If they lose both these games, then we're pretty much destined for the first day of the conference tournament. If they win, even just one of them, then it's a really good shot to at least get that first round bye.
Well, and just looking at the feeling, though, like that would surround it, it would be like, you know, both these teams are good. Boise's a good team. I mean, I'm sorry, Colorado State's a good team, and Wyoming's a good team. However, if we lose both of these, it's just going to have such a rain cloud over the entire Aggie fan base, I think. Whereas if we win both of these, it's still like, you know, we're not what we thought we were this season, but we're starting to get there, and we're getting there pretty quickly. And I'd feel somewhat confident about at least making, you know, winning a game or two in the conference tournament. So, and you know, you split those, who knows? It depends on how it all goes, but they have a really good opportunity in 2 very winnable games to change the season, in my mind.
That would be a 4-1 stretch after we were like 8-12.
I'm not predicting it or anything. I'm just saying like the possibility is there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really big thing, not just for this year, but I think kind of a broader view for the next couple of years. I think that's where like the last couple of games really come in place. Because, I mean, frankly, all the games that really matter from here on out are going to be in the conference tournament.
Yeah, no question.
So really what these games now are for is to get the fans excited for next year. I mean, you think about it, we don't really lose much. We lose Jalen Moore, who...
Great player,
but I mean...
Aggie all-time great, yeah, but...
It looks like we've got enough replacement with Kobe and Sam in the backcourt to at least manage without him.
And a guy like Dargenton, too.
Yeah.
You know, step up on the wing.
Step up on the wing, you got the recruits coming in. So, I mean... But coming into next year, it would be a lot different, even if we were just like 15-15 in the year, than if we were to, like, I don't know, like just lose out, be 11-18 or whatever it would be. So, I mean, I think that's really the big thing here is next year, if the Spectrum's packed, the Spectrum is rocking, I think we got a good shot to maybe not win the like regular season conference title, but to be one of the top like four, top three teams maybe. But that, I think, depends on the Spectrum being a good home court advantage, which requires fans to be there, which requires them to be excited, which is going to require several wins down the stretch.
Agreed.
And one thing this week we'll do is if we can go in there and win both these games, then that'll get us on a roll for our pretty much our toughest two remaining games after this week. You know, when San Diego State comes in on the 15th, and then when we have to go back to Nevada on the 18th next Saturday. And so going with two wins this week would help a lot for next week. And then after that is, you know, San Jose, which shouldn't, you know, they're all right, I guess, but then after that
beat New Mexico at the Pit, you know, for what it's worth. Given New Mexico's down.
You know, and then the second to last game, Air Force coming into Utah State, that should be easier, although we have lost to them already, but that was at Air Force. And then the final game of the regular season, you know, going down to UNLV, which they're not on their tops this year.
I think the big thing though with this week, you kind of touched on it, is I think Colorado State's the bigger game because it's a road game.
Agreed.
We've been terrible on the road.
Absolutely agreed.
Like, home, we've played pretty well. We had the good game against Boise State, which we just barely came up short. We've beat, of course, non-conference. That's pretty much all of our wins. We're at home, except UCI. But then Nevada, Fresno State. But then you look on the road, lost at Air Force, lost at New Mexico, lost at Boise State, lost at San Diego State in Wyoming. We haven't really gotten a really solid road win this year. Colorado State probably isn't a really solid team, but it will at least give a lot of confidence to the team going into the games against
on the road.
Yeah, going against Nevada next week and even San Jose State. I mean, if we can at least get that one road win, that would be huge.
I guess that, like, my point of all this is really that I hope that Coach Duryea is telling the guys very similar things to this at this point, saying, look, guys, you just beat Fresno State, like, handily, beat Nevada handily, and barely lost on the road to Boise State without Kobe McEwen for much of the game, without Shane Rector, and you lose by two. So I hope that Coach is telling them that and then saying we've got a huge opportunity here where you can go and win two big games this week and really make something of the season.
Yeah. Guess final point, like you were saying, next two games, all important, make or break. So hopefully we can at least get one win. Anyways, we promised a little bit of football, and despite our constant moaning about having to talk about football when we don't want to talk about football, we're going to talk about football.
Yeah.
We kind of have to, but this was actually a pretty big week for Utah State. Not in terms of games, of course, but in National Signing Day. It's probably the most exciting paper pushing in America, I think. Maybe side of like a free agency starting for like NBA or NFL and stuff like that. But Utah State actually got some really good recruits this year. Like, I mean, granted, we're still, like, the ranking that they give us for our class is still in the hundreds. But in terms of what Utah State's gotten over the past couple years, over its entire program history, pretty much, this was actually a really good class. A lot of quality talent, a lot of guys that could come in immediately as well. A lot of good JUCO guys. So
Yeah. I think that the thing, like, everyone talks about star rankings and how, you know, how much can we actually, how much stock can we actually put into star rankings? And I don't know to be honest. But the thing that excites me is Matt Wells, along with many other people around the program, people who have watched the signing day very closely and whatnot, they say that they think that this could be either the number one or number two class that Matt Wells has had here at Utah State, which, you know, he hasn't been here for all that long, but he's had some really good recruits coming in. And, I see a lot of guys on here just looking at who we beat out for them, and it's pretty impressive in some cases. You know, a guy like Henry Columbia beating out, you know, Arkansas and Western Michigan, who had a really good, coming off a really good year with really good recruiters and everything. And looking at like Carson Terrell, who had offers from BYU, from Nevada, from
UCLA,
Utah, tons of, you know, Pac-12 and Mountain West schools. You look at a guy like Alfred Edwards, who I believe swapped his commitment from Nevada. We beat out a lot of other Mountain West schools coming off of a 3-win season. And part of me is like really confused, but I'm just going to go with it.
I think like, there's enough, at least for most recruits, like I can kind of see them like throughout their high school careers, they're at least looking at Utah State like, okay, good program. And this past year, I think at least coaching staff probably like sold this like, this is like an aberration, a reloading year, and you're going to be a part of that reload. I'm really stoked for, I guess, the guys that really are just going to come in and immediately help. Carson Terrell, very good chance to be our starting tight end next year. Mm-hmm. Louis Compton, he was an All-American second team in junior college. He's going to come in. He's probably going to be contributing pretty early, if not immediately. I can't remember the guy's name, cornerback from California that came in.
Fortenberry.
He was also another guy that was looked at by several other pretty good colleges. There's a lot of good talent that's immediately going to come in and start to do stuff. Like, there's going to be some like Columbia, maybe like Scarver and those that will take some time. But this team needed a lot of talent and a lot of hard work, and I think that this recruiting class is going to kind of actually bring that in.
Yeah. I mean, Deontay Fortenberry, as you were saying, he had offers from Baylor, given that's a train wreck right now, but from Oregon State, who we know who their coach is. And
who is their coach?
We know that he's a good recruiter. Beat out Iowa State, beat out Colorado State. That's a pretty impressive, at least on paper, a pretty impressive recruiting class from Matt Wells and this Utah State staff.
Yeah. So, I guess, Trevor, we're all on the front row. We all camp out for tickets. How far does the needle move with these recruits for excitement level for next year?
Well, depends how we use them. Is kind of what I'm saying.
That is the key.
You know, what good is Terrell Carson going to be even if he's like the best in the nation if we never use him like we've been never using a tight end the past few years? You know, so if we can actually use the use the recruits that are high up there, it'll be nice. You know, I would assume Columbia, the quarterback that's coming in from Florida, I think he'll probably redshirt this year. We have enough quarterbacks, you know, but Kent, Love, you know, DJ, if it has to get down to there, we still got Hobbs. So I don't think he'll be really pertaining to doing anything this year. Jamal Evans, which is a recruited more of an athlete than a QB, what he played. I've heard he can actually come in and do some stuff right away back in, you know, in the if only special teams. But.
You know, I mean, we've talked about Coach Yost and what we hope that he comes in and is able to do and what we hope that Matt Wells does as far as turning over the offense and opening up position battles and whatnot. But, you know, the bottom line is usually a recruiting class doesn't come in and make an immediate impact. This is more of a long-term excitement for me.
Yeah, I was at the press conference where Coach Wells was announcing all of the recruits and kind of talking about them, and he was talking about Carson Terrell and how Dax are right now our projected tight end was kind of helping get him here, saying, hey, I need you to come here so I can get better. But another thing,
super cool.
Yeah, another thing that really impresses me about Carson is right now he's, you know, he's a dual athlete the same time. You know, you hear about these, you know, the football, basketball, track athletes, but this, you know, Carson's a football, wrestling, basketball. Wrestling and basketball are going on at the same time. So, you know, you're getting tired from basketball practice and going straight to a wrestling meet and competing. That shows a lot of drive to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. The biggest thing here is there's a lot of solid work ethic, I think, with a couple of these recruits, which hopefully changes a little bit of the culture that we saw last year with some of the players just not really caring, I guess, all that much, going to Castle Manor after a game, Kent Myers. but, I mean, there's a real chance, I think, for some of these guys to really come in, do stuff immediately. I mean, secondary, offensive line, I think there's a huge gaping hole for talent. So, I mean, there's a couple guys that we might be seeing on the field first game of the season, but I think we'll see. I mean, we don't want to be too concerned with wins in January with recruits, but
you never know. With a guy like Rashad Lewis, he came in and right from his very first game made a difference. So, could happen.
Yeah. But I think that's pretty much wrapping up our day here.
Yeah, we hit on a lot today, man. I mean, kind of blew through it, but like we.
I love these days because then it's just like.
I like when there's a lot of sports going on.
I kind of like feel like we're in a bit of a whirlwind, but I mean, if we're talking about a lot of stuff, it probably means we're actually doing a lot of good stuff because we're not talking about tennis or anything if they're doing poorly. Yeah. So, I mean, look, we've said it before, Aggie sports, apart from football and kind of men's basketball a bit, we're doing pretty well. So,
yeah.
Hopefully good we stuff. Do this again next week.
Yeah, after, come in here next week after we have wins over Wyoming and Colorado State.
Yeah, and then we have like a 5-star football commit that just decommits from like Alabama and comes to us.
Dude, I can't wait.
It's going to be stoked.
But not because of academics, just because he wants to come to you, Logan.
Even if it is because of academics, I'll take
it. Yeah, whatever.
Anyways, peacing out from Section 119.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Bye.
YOLO.